those who are successful can forge their own reality. And when success comes through indiscriminate bloodshed, that reality can be pretty freaking warped. We talk with Shaul Schwartz about narcocultura on this episode of Mighty Movie Podcast. Hey, I'm Dan Persons. Welcome to MMP. The documentary Narcocultura focuses on two intersecting worlds, seen primarily through the eyes of two inhabitants. In Juarez, Mexico, Richie Soto is a crime scene investigator, fighting against the cartels in an atmosphere of corruption, intimidation, and a culture that sees the cartels as modern-day Robin Hoods. Up north in Los Angeles, Edgar Quintero is a narco-corrido, a songwriter and singer composing odes that celebrate and romanticize the cartels' bloody exploits. The film is directed by Shaul Schwartz. He started out as a photojournalist, covering conflicts in such places as Haiti and the Gaza Strip, and here looks into the impact that the cartels have had in popular Latin American culture and in the lives of those fighting against them. The film can be nothing short of mind-boggling, watching Quintero entertain adoring fans as they sing along to lyrics celebrating the violence of the cartels, capturing Soto's ongoing struggle to enforce the law, visiting a cartel cemetery where elaborate crypts looking like nothing so much as miniaturized mansions stand in testament to their occupants' wealth and power. It is an eye-opener of a film, and I wanted to talk with Schwartz about it. So, here is the interview. Enjoy. I was talking to Susan about this. I basically was telling her that she has to stop bringing me movies that make me grieve for humanity.
I definitely didn't make a romantic comic in that sense. that was my editor's joke. He always, if he didn't watch, he was like, thank you for sitting for this romantic comedy. Yeah, I guess narco cultura has, does not have a happy end, or is definitely not it's not a light movie. To some degree, it reflects the depression that I felt being so long at the border area and trying to take what I thought was a different and wider look on the effects of the drug war and not only focusing on the drug war itself. You know, I think this routine, I very much wanted to put the viewer in this routine, first of all, of Juarez, and through Richie, I think you really get to kind of a great vehicle to the town and to its spirit, and this endlessness and this hopelessness and what seems all like almost like this artificial fake act that everybody's putting their little bullets away and doing everything, and everything seems so correct, yet it's obviously going in nowhere, and seems that nobody cares for way too long already. So I guess I wanted to reflect that feeling that I felt on the ground. It's hard, because I think when you make a film, particularly a documentary and about a subject, if people are kind and interested enough to go see it, they want to come out and say, what did I do? How did I save the whale? And I get this question all the time, well, what do we do? And I don't have a very simple answer. If it was simple, I guess maybe somebody would actually do more. There is no like, okay, 1, 2, 3. There's ideas. I definitely have my own ideas. I definitely know and really loudly continue to say what we shouldn't continuing doing, because we seem to do everything we can wrong on this problem. But I guess, yeah, it was a downer. I don't think, by the way, I think every time people hear about the movie, they think it might be a hard watch, which I actually think it's not at all. And I get that feedback all the time. You know, it's so dark, and I heard this, but I think it's very, it really sucks you in, and because the way of the movie is styled, and because at the end it is a verite story of two people and not a political story or a talking head story, I feel like the viewer does kind of fly in, and once you're in, it's a very gripping movie, at least in my opinion. But in a sense, it's... and we had this discussion as we were making it between producers and editors and me, of course, on how far do we take this unanswered kind of heaviness and what's kind of the ending of it. And although parts of my team at time were like, you know, how do you find a beam of light? How do you take us out with a higher note? Which, to a sense, I do. I think Richie's poem and what he wrote to tell about how he feels about a city was beautiful, as much as I was sad. But I also felt it wouldn't reflect what we really felt at the ground when we finished making this film.
You can't always have the beam of light. Reality is not like that.
Yeah, it's definitely a dark reality, and I think the film does good in projecting the reality without being too judgmental, yet really getting under people's skin at the same time and getting real, very close access. Again, I really think it reflects my tiredness of being there I was actually there for 5 years. I made the film for 3 years, but I was taking pictures for 2 years prior to that as a still photographer. And, you know, it was interesting. The production-wise, what I'd always do is fly to El Paso, take a cab to the bridge, and walk across. And in those kind of 50 steps, everything would change. When you went in, you're like, welcome to hell, and be careful, and at the same time fascinated and interested, and so much can happen, and it's this like waiting game, and today they killed this, and then this has happened, what will this guy say? And yet, when you went out, it was the same way. Me and Juan, it was a two people film. There was only always just the two of us. We would walk out, and it was always very tense. I mean, a couple of times we really left in a hurry or something happened or we were frightened. But even when we weren't, there was this strange act of approaching the bridge. We'd usually be with our fixer there. We had a couple, but our favorite one when he could work, the local... he's a local photographer who helps us a lot. I won't name him. And because the cartels are really everywhere, they're considered to have information, what they call hokones, hawks, everywhere. And, you know, you always assume to be watched. Watched by the unit, watched at your hotel, watched at the restaurant, watched the bathroom, watched. Mm-hmm. You don't know who is who, you're not sure who's talking about what, but you live in that fear and assumption. And so every time we would leave, there was always this feeling of, well, if we piss someone off, this might be the time he does something about it. And then you'd always feel, oh, it's probably ridiculous, it's my paranoia, it's fine, and I'm here. So it did end up being that. But we would be dropped off by our fixer at the bridge. And it really wasn't until you literally kind of went through that clack clack of the bridge and looked back that you realized it's fine. And then it was always those 50 steps back, and there was always this big happiness of me and Juan looking at each other, knowing we're fine, excited or less excited of what we'd achieved on that trip. And there was always the look back, looking at Neto, at the photographer, at Juarez, at this story, kind of literally walking away from it, and knowing that you know, in a day or two, you'll be back in your reality, which suddenly felt much more comfortable and sane than the reality you just walked out of. It was very contrasting for me, anyway. I got lost there for a second. But, and I think, you know, I try to reflect that reality. I think I understood that as a journalist coming from the outside, there are a lot of pluses. You could probably get away with pecking at stuff locals can't. You know, locals were never let into the CSI, for example, unit ever, while foreigners were let. Then all of them except me were cut out. But and you cannot release a movie like I did living in Juarez. And I like that. I like that responsibility. I felt a little bit of duck out of place. I'm an Israeli photographer. I've lived here for a long time. I have a fascination with Mexico, but to some degree, I'm completely not a person that's directly related to this. Yet I did feel that, and I was just overwhelmed by the strength of the story, and mainly by the way people are just accepted. Somehow we've been able to label this as this ongoing thing we can't do anything about. It's Mexico's drug war. That sounds very far. By the way, anytime anybody calls it Mexico's drug war, I interrupt them and I say, it's the American-Mexican drug war. $50 billion a year come from here. The guns come from here. The demand is what makes the engines turn. And yet, it's amazing. I don't think anybody really cares or really is bothered. I don't think people here feel a part of it, although such a high majority of people I know do drugs, and I'm not judgmental about it, and are involved in it in day-to-day. And it ties into so many things. It ties into the overwhelming number of jail cells occupied in this country, which cost endless taxpayers. It ties into immigration. It ties into everybody on the from budget, and everybody from Border Patrol to customs to everybody exploding on the budgets when they're clearly unsuccessful to stop the drug trade. And it's actually this lie to completely manipulate immigration. I mean, it ties into so many aspects. And obviously, I went through the what it does to the next generation and what it projects in the art and how that affects kind of the hearts and minds. That was really what I was after. But I really did see beyond that bridge and beyond that feeling, this overwhelmingly big story that it doesn't happen in the Middle East. It doesn't happen far. It doesn't happen without us, the American part of it. And yet, everybody kind of feels that it's far, it's too tiring to deal with. And if they're not, if they were interested, I think people usually get lost in the details because it's so easy to ask what cartel, who's corrupt, who's who, what is what. Oh, everybody's corrupt. Okay, done. Let's go have a beer. So,
what sort of brings it home here is the story in the film of Edgar Quintero, who's becoming a rising star. And was one of, at least for me, one of the bigger paradoxes of the film, because I don't know whether anybody else can, but I couldn't figure out if he's a poser or if he's just naive or if he's willfully ignorant.
I think he's a little bit of all. Edgar has been singing since he's a kid. He grew up in a rough area. He grew up in the U.S. He was born in L.A., but he sees himself very much as a Mexican, which is a very common identity crisis among Mexican-Americans. And when Narcocorridos and this pop culture really started blowing up, I think it opened the door to Edgar. He got approached. He was sitting in a jail cell, got approached to by friends he knew that started this band and told him this is the next big thing. These Narcocorridos have been around for a while. They've shifted very much after the 206 war and adopting a much more violent way. And he stepped into the scene, and to some degree I see him as a product of narco culture, as a product of this scene. At the end of the day, if Edgar was here, he would tell you, well, if you judge me for violence, why don't you judge Tarantino? Why don't you judge the makers of Sopranos? And to some degree, it's ridiculous, and to some degree, it's right. We all do have, you know, a lot of people make comparison to gangster rap. We all, in entertainment and in the arts, reflect on reality, and we many times are interested in the outlaw, and kind of like everybody loves liking an outlaw to some degree in an ironic way. And I think Edgar delivers a part. He wouldn't make money if he wouldn't make a living if he sang love songs, to be quite honest. He feels that this is the product that the people want, and he's a supply chain. I don't think he feels very bad about what he's doing. I really wanted him to, in a weird way. I kept thinking that he's ashamed because he thinks he will come off in a film as somebody who doesn't completely believe or has hesitations. I don't think he's unhuman, by the way. In a weird way, he's a very sensitive guy. And it's not that he has joy from hearing about dead people, but he's not very connected to it in a weird way. He sings about something that, as you said, maybe a poser. He acts up. He has to learn it a little bit from YouTube and Blog del Narco. And so he doesn't live with the idea that maybe my mom's story will be the one that will be need to pay its dues or get burned next, or maybe my life will be on the line because I didn't do something that the traffickers now want. And I think that kind of took him into the scene, and it's a very addictive scene. It's la moda, as they say, which means basically it's in fashion. And so he kind of adopts himself into it, if that makes sense. And many times I was disappointed, because slowly when I got to know Edgar, there's a lot of good sides in him. He runs around and does a lot of things that musicians do as groupies, but beyond that, he's kind of a good family man. He loves his children. He cares about his wife. He's happy with a little bit. He's humble. He is very kind to people. He likes his fans and endlessly adore him. And he will sign the latest interview in the rain, even if nobody's taking a picture. He likes it. And I think he also realizes that to some degree, this violent form of singing, for him personally, is actually taking him out of direct link in a weird way to the violent. Now he talks about big traffickers and interviews him, but he puts a line. He's not one of them. He's not. If it wasn't for the music, I always assumed he would actually be a gangster. He would actually be involved in trafficking. So to some degree, I think music is a savior, in an irony. But he certainly has to adopt, and he certainly has to become popular, and he's American, or an American-Mexican, and he works hard to try and get his street cred, if you will.
You know, you went from being initially a photographer to becoming a filmmaker, and I'm wondering, you do talk a little bit in the press notes about the demands that filmmaking place upon you that are different from what you have with a photographer. But how does the rest of it translate? I mean, when you're doing something, particularly when you're in the midst of something that could be risky, that could be dangerous, are you still looking for that moment? Are you still looking for that image?
I think coming from a photojournalist background has a lot of pluses. I think initially photojournalist, and to use an old National Geographic phrase, we go further so you feel closer. It is true. You go to any news story that's hectic, and you'll kind of see the lines of defense, and the last ones, the ones that really put out themselves out there would usually be the photojournalist, and I grew up in that environment, and it's a mix of things. You're looking for an image, you're looking for a moment, but you're also following the heartbeat of the story, and we're very attached to it. And I'm a huge believer in photojournalists. I think it's a really interesting time technology-wise with cameras and all that mumbo-jumbo, which I won't get too deep in, but it gives photographers a tool that they're used to in their hand to basically create film. Now, that doesn't mean that one becomes a filmmaker. There's a lot of differences. This is a minimalistic silent art to a very complex, huge teamwork, very different storytelling techniques. But that initial rawness, that initial I'll hit the ground quick and fierce and no fear and get you really deep in and be a fly on the wall is very much instinctively the same. And it doesn't change that much. I mean, it changes excuse me. It changes because, you know, you're following a character, you have audio, you obviously have technical. But the idea of understanding how to get yourself places of risk-taking, of access, of sensitivity, and certainly of photography are the same. And so, to me, you know, I started this film because I felt that it's an amazing story and I felt that I can't tell it in pictures. When I met Edgar the first time, and met Bucanes, it was on a day that I woke up in Tijuana. I was on assignment for National Geographic magazine taking pictures. I photographed two murders that just happened that day in Tijuana, which was an average day in 210 in Tijuana. And I was, because the second murder, I was kind of late to the Bucanes gig that was happening across the border in Riverside. And I drove off there, and literally from the stinky clothes from the crime scene came to the show. And while I knew about this music, it was the first time I had experienced it myself. I'd been in the scene. And it's not only the music, to see everybody singing along and the style and the car and the way the girls are dressed and the way the boys are dressed. And I was really angry. I was really disturbed. I thought it was an amazing story. And I took a ton of pictures and I sent them back to Geographic and nobody understood what the hell I wanted. It's true. And to be honest, what I felt, this huge juxtaposition that I think became the guiding light of how to direct and cut the film, did not live in the still image. In the still image lived a picture of a man dressed up with a vest that's ridiculous with bullets and a bazooka in his hand and people kind of waving. And, you know, people who saw the picture, I say, is this real? And I mean, you say, no, it's a show. This is what it is. It's a real scene. And everybody thought it was confusing. And we just couldn't get across the complexity of the feeling. And most people thought that this story is not connected, which I felt it was immensely connected. And so it's a really beautiful, different tool to say, you know what? I could say it in a film. Because in a film, you get the complexity is endless, and you really get the tools to take it wherever you want. Where there wasn't a way I could have captured those images that night better that would have told the story I want to tell.
Wanted to ask you about the cemetery sequence, because there are a lot of stunning moments in the film, but that's certainly one of them, and I think one of the things that made it stand out for me is that there is a bit of disorientation initially, like, what the hell am I looking at here?
Yeah, that was, speaking about images, I photographed that cemetery prior to filming it as well a couple of years back, and people didn't get it, and I said, isn't this amazing? I like, what is this neighborhood?
Exactly.
And people thought it was houses, and I was like, no, this is mausoleums. These are necro graves. Yeah, I mean, we do ID it very quick, and the man that we will leave nameless says, you know, all the big narcos are buried here, and he reveals it's his dream to have such a mausoleum. So, you know, we attended to it pretty quick, but I think it's just stunning, this idea of why it's done. And I think somebody who's exposed to it for the first time just is kind of, it takes you a minute to understand, really? That's what, why would anybody have a bulletproof grave? I mean, you're dead, for example. It just doesn't really set in our minds. And so again, I think that's really what we tried in the way it's cut and directed and shot, is to capture the what you feel when you visit. And that was certainly my, I mean, obviously I knew where I was going. But it's this shocking place that you, A, are shocked that in any country authorities let that happen. Mm-hmm. And B, you're shocked that people, there's something about narco-cultura, about their sort of vanity and display of richness that has very poor taste. And taste is in the eye of the beholder, so that would be my opinion on it. You know, of like this big, bulky, loud, over the top for no reason. And it really comes across in Jardín de la Mayo in Sinaloa, in the narco gravesite. I think it's a famous place for a lot of Mexicans know about. It's a place that's been covered before, certainly by other journalists. But and maybe because of that, it was a big deal for Edgar to go see it. It was one of the things you do for him on the tour when you go to a city like Culiacán. Mm-hmm. And Culiacán being kind of the capital of Sinaloa, this monstrous, huge size cartel, is a city that different cities really display narco culture very differently. Sinaloa is definitely the one that it's out there. It's very screamish. It's very in your face. The trafficking style. It has so many shrines for different narco saints like Malverde and Santa Muerte. It has everybody knows, oh, this club is a narco club, and that would be the kind of the hot club in town. And this scene, and it's very common to see the boys with the trucks kind of patrolling after high school and all the girls waiting. It's just very much on display. And the cemetery is one of them. And it you know, it comes a little bit because it's pretty much what they say in Mexico, controlado, a controlled zone. There's only inner fighting. There's not exactly a turf war fighting anymore. There used to be. And people are, it's a very strange thing. People are proud of their cartel. Even people you would never expect, that would never tell you, I'm proud of a cartel. I would say, this is our cancer, this is horrible. But if you mention the Zetas in Culiacán, people are like, whoa, for God's sake, stick with your own team. And it's that kind of very open, you know, it's really kind of the mecca of the culture. To many degrees. And so, you know, it's not as surprising as it is when you get to know the town, and when you spend some time, that graveyard becomes less surprising. I wouldn't say not surprising, it's always a little shocking. And it's also a fairly new phenomenon. It used to be a little bit, but suddenly it mushroomed into this, let me see if I could build, oh, he built a $1 million grave, I'm going for the 1.5 million, you know, that kind of... feeling. And it's as much as it's not my taste, and I don't need a bulletproof glass mausoleum, for example, that Beltan Laver has there, I can understand local. Sinaloa is traditionally a farmer's state. It is not a rich state by any means, and it's a hard-working state of people who work the land. And I can understand how a local can walk past this and be overwhelmed and want to touch this kind of new Greek mythology or something. That's what I really hope people in general understand from the film. It's not to be judgmental about the culture. While I don't defend it, or it obviously bothered me, or else I wouldn't make this film. What I really came to grips with is because of the reality and the policy, because of everything we accept, because the bad guys are winning, because of all these things, that reality of the farmer walking and looking at the grave and his son maybe wanting to be a narco because it's got this huge image and there's so much vanity becomes really clear. It's so easy to understand if you spend a week there. It really is, you know, I mean, you see this in the movie, a woman saying, I'd love to marry a narco, a teenage high school woman. And, I mean, how many stupid things did you do when you were 16 because girls thought it was cool?
I don't want to count. Seriously.
But, you know, so we tend to forget that society has its peer pressures. And all societies do, and Mexican and American societies are not different. And when there's this acceptance, when they're saying the songs of the heroes, when you're buried in huge things, when you get away with crimes such as murder and have complete impunity to operate, there's a myth in the making. And people look up to that. Mainly kids, mainly teenagers, but it's not limited. And the other thing I think that people don't understand is just the sheer size of the phenomenon. The Sinaloa cartel that these singers, the singers I followed sing to, there's different singers for different cartels, is an organization that's estimated at revenues of $25 billion a year. It probably pays directly anywhere between 150,000 to a quarter million people. It's a tremendous or huge organization, obviously a very unknitted, messy organization, which is very hard to track and follow. You know, when you have this kind of money, yeah, there's parts of Culiacan that, to a sense, you know, people ask me, but are they really Robin Hoods? No, they don't physically help the poor, but if you have a business that sells farming tools and you're on the way to the mountains in Culiacan, you're probably selling to a lot of narcos and they might be paying cash and very easily, and they might be good clients if they don't get upset with you. And certainly Mercedes and Hummer have sold more cars in Culiacan than they would expect in a farming area. So there is an it's a big business. And so all these things, they add up. They add up to the young boy that has to choose, should I go in Juarez and should I go work like my mom for $5 an hour in this factory where I'm treated like shit and this is America's big hope for the last 13 years after NAFTA? Or should I just hide the gun for this kid and do him that one little favor because he's got $200 to score me right now? Oh, and I could tell I'm related to him. Shit, maybe that girl's going to like me. You really quickly, when you spend time, understand how this culture is, how kids see this, how this could become a way of life or something you idolize. And of course, the reality of most people joining organized crime is harsh. They die young, most of them don't become rich, and they live a horrific life. But that's besides the point, as most kids would tell me. But yeah, I guess to bring it back, I see a lot of people who kind of see the film and they're extremely angry with the culture and these corrupt Mexicans and these songs, and, you know, A, they don't really want to accept the responsibility that is the cycle that we create, and B, they just want to hang the messenger. To one degree, I respected these kids, and I respect Edgar to some degree, that at least he doesn't stick his head in the sand. He actually reads every day the news because he wants to write a stupid corrido. But he understands this complexity to a degree in this game and how tinted and wrong it is. And if you ask him, he'd say, legalize drug even if I don't lose what I do. Screw the cartels. And you don't have to agree or not agree to that opinion, but I like that you have one. And I feel that 90% of us Americans here, and it's not so true for Mexicans care about this. I've just kind of, it's just, this is a bit, it is what it is. I don't care. It's never going to get better. Screw it. Mexico's drug war. And I think that's really, you know, I made a movie about two people, but I want you, the viewer, to walk out and think of it, how is it that I am involved to some degree? Because I, Shaul, and I know many people feel involved and feel that we do all have our little parts. Most of us are, you know, I don't remember the laser statistics, but it's somewhere in the 80%, I believe, of Americans will try drugs at one point or another. And I'm not judgmental of it. It's fine. You want to do drugs, do them. But we don't need a bloodbath cycle of so much death and so much hurt on both sides. And if we don't change the reality, we're not going to change these kids from singing about these guys as being Robin Hoods. We can't. This problem does not have a military solution. We can't throw more money and guns at it, and we've been doing that for years. If we don't understand that, it will not get better, to say the least.
Chao, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Narcocultura is playing in New York now and is opening up this weekend in L.A., and is playing in a number of other cities as well, including Texas, Tennessee, Illinois, like that. And there should be additional rollouts following that as well. We'll have the trailer and the link to the official website over at mightymoviepodcast.com. And at this point, it appears this may be our last Mighty Movie Podcast. I'm going to keep covering film, mainstream, independent, and genre, all of that stuff, but in other ways, and those will keep going up on mightymoviepodcast.com and over at the Huffington Post as well. So do keep your eye out for that. It's been a lot of fun. Hope you've enjoyed it. Please stay tuned. More good stuff will be coming up. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend. This has been a production of Upstart Company NYC. Copyright 2013 Upstart Company NYC. All rights reserved, no unauthorized duplication permitted.